Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. I'm delighted to, indeed, to welcome a friend. Friend of 50 years, believe it or not. Dennis Mulcahy. When you're having fun, or even if you're not Dennis Mulcahy, 50 years, you know. They used to say 21 years is a mighty long time, but we go back a long, long way. Very welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you, Adrian. And first of all, let me thank you for the 50 years of support you have given us, because we would never have been able to do it without you and Anya. You were always there for us.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, Dennis. Ours, indeed, a small contribution to the thousands of supporters of Project Children. I want first of all, let our listeners know that Dennis Mulcahy and, indeed, your brother, Pat, had back in the early to mid-70s considered a plight of kids and the troubles in Northern Ireland, and by 1975 decided to and become the founders of Project Children Northern Ireland. And maybe you'll bring us back to that, but not before I tell particularly those who are sensitive to information like this. You're from Rockchapel, County Cork, and Dennis, you had emigrated to the United States. When was that? 1962, right?
Correct. Mm. March, right before St. Patrick's Day. I was here. March was a big month for me.
Definitely. And you had joined the New York Police Department in 1969.
Correct.
And serving with the Tactical Police Force Street Crime Unit and 28th Precinct as a detective squad before joining the bomb squad in 1983. Now, I just give that as a background to, you know, you, your involvement, and the foundation of Project Children Northern Ireland. Can you bring us back?
Well, 1975, again, was a very, very bad time in Northern Ireland. You know, every night here on national television, you know, you had kids on the street, rioting, soldiers, people getting killed and hurt every day. So we came up with this idea, maybe we should, because most of the marches were during the summer, and that we would take some of the kids out of there for the summer, and something simple, just give them a break away from the troubles. And we felt it would be only fair that we would bring kids from both sides. And that very first year, we brought six kids here to Greenwood Lake, and of course, two stayed with the Hoffman family, and became longtime friends, were best men in each other's weddings, and that was the beginning. No idea that almost 50 years later that over 22,000 kids would benefit from it, and we have brought out close to 800 interns, university kids, and we have built like 40 homes for Habitat for Humanity throughout the country, from Montana to New Orleans to Texas, and amazing, but it attracted amazing people, Adrian, and all this was done by volunteers. Nobody got paid, people donated their time and money, hard-earned money.
Our own archives from around that time would show that indeed not everybody thought that this was a great idea, particularly those who took a look at the level of commitment it would take to take total strangers from Northern Ireland, from those who knew nothing but troubles and disquiet and whatever, and to bring them over for 6 weeks for the summer. That turned a lot of people not off, but it turned a lot of people towards backing off the level of commitment that took. Just tell us about that, the early days, and how you grew the organization. You might start with telling us about Greenwood Lake, the community at Greenwood Lake.
Well, Adrian, it was amazing, because the responsibility, when you would think about it, the many things that could happen and, really did happen over the years, but we were very, very fortunate. We never lost anybody, but it was an undertaking. And I think that one of the problems, sometimes people would think about it too much, and if you did, you wouldn't do it, believe me. We had people that came along, people with all backgrounds. We had,
yes,
actually in Long Island, because I was the first group off the plane, there was a guy, Neil Abelson, that I don't think he's no longer with us. That is the problem today. We have lost so many people. But anyhow, Neil had taken the kids, his last name, Abelson. So the first kid off the plane, everybody was interested, the news media, whatever, and it's a Jewish family, So everybody thought you had to be Irish to get involved.
Yeah.
So it was a great way of getting the word out. But attracted great people, and many times people with quite a number of kids of their own, and didn't have a lot of money or whatever, but were willing. There was always an extra plate at the table, and again, amazing people. Couldn't say enough about the Horse families. They were the Horse families were the backbone of the program.
Yes, indeed, and there was no recompense. There was no fund to chip in for this. This was taking host families for children, from the troubled areas of Northern Ireland. That, again, in addition to everything else, they were not only responsible, for the welfare of these kids that were coming over, but also they picked up the cost. And as we all know, there are, significant costs, even in households where, there are children already. So this was a high, high level of commitment before anybody even got off the plane here.
Yes, it sure was, Adrian. The only thing we covered was airfare and insurance. And, it was very simple. And for people donating, they felt good, because whatever they donated went strictly for the cause. There was no overhead.
Yes.
It went right for airfare, insurance, and it brought a child for the summer and gave them a break. And, the impact it had on these kids. I mean, we get emails every day from people that were out almost 50 years ago, because there wasn't great communication in them years. People would be disappointed because the young man or young lady didn't write back. And my question was, how many times did they write home while they were here? And they would say none. They never wrote home. So they weren't big on staying in touch. But thousands of kids have come back to us, have traced back down the Horse families, and have contacted them and shared with them how it changed their lives.
Yes. Now, we have to also bear in mind that the political atmosphere on our side of the Atlantic was at its height, at its for better or worse. There was, it's not as if there was any doubt whatsoever that kids who were coming here didn't, or they weren't going to, I wouldn't say fit in, but they were going to see a side of life here in terms of, you know, they're looking at those who knew nothing whatsoever and wouldn't about what it's like to, you know, grow up in areas with bombs and bullets and killings taking place every day of the week. This was going to be a double shock. It would also, it would be a shock for those, obviously, coming here to find out what it is like to live in in peace and harmony and see what the difference was from whence they came. But it was also, Dennis, it was a high expectation also for, you know, for kids who were here to welcome, you know, these kids and figure out, well, what are we supposed to do here? How are we going to meld over what turned out to be a six-week, give or take, period?
Mm-hmm. Well, we always said, Adrian, you treat them like your own kids. You know, if there's chores to be done, you know, don't get up in the morning and say, what would you like to do? Because there was so much they didn't know what to do. You know, it was somewhat overwhelming. So I think that, you know, we emphasize that, and that really worked. Treat them like your own. Something to be done, they chip in. They, you know, they just like raising your own kids. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible to do it because it was too much of a change. But we also stayed in touch with teachers, Adrian, to make sure that the trip wasn't hurting kids, you know, after seeing all these great summers and, you know, living in big mansions sometimes, you know, how it affected them. And the teachers always said, look, the good definitely outweighs the bad. You know, I'm sure that there were some cases, you know, that may not have been great, but overall it really was amazing. And it was day to day, and we each challenge or whatever came up, you know, we dealt with it, and we kept it simple.
My guest friends, founder, co-founder of Project Children, founded 48 solid years ago, which brought, it was the beginning, and it was the seed that developed into one of the best international charities, and still all this time later, it would be hard to even fathom, you know, what, how the responsibilities, and but maybe we should get to, Dennis, the level of appreciation when these kids went back to Ireland. First of all, what age group are we talking about generally?
Well, it was mostly 10 to 14, you know, and then we got up into another area with interns with Whitby University kids. But the whole, you know, the backbone of the program really was the young kids, 10 to 14.
At that time, of course, you also, in your own, and you come from a police, a family of police, including indeed a couple of your own now. But in the police department, becoming involved in, you know, the bomb squad and becoming a first grade detective in a job where one, there was no doubt. And to this day, people, you know, will know that those who are in security, and particularly in the police department, and we could refine it even more, the New York City Police Department, they go to out the door every day, not knowing if they're going to be able to return in the evening to their families. To be involved in an elite segment of the New York City Police Department, you know, bombs, defusing bombs, that was indeed, had to bring a lot of worry to your wife Miriam and to your kids. But just describe that transition from, you know, working as you had, you know, in street crime and whatever, to now switch over to arguably the most dangerous segment of policing with the New York City Police Department.
Well, Adrian, that really went back to April of 1963 when I joined the Army, and I was in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and there was a clerical error. My MOS was 140, which is like a cannoneer. I was with an artillery unit, and I was to go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. The clerk, instead of writing 140, he wrote 410, which was demolition and bomb disposal. I ended up in Fort Knox, Kentucky, and, of course, that was all in my record, and that's how I ended up in the bomb squad. But one more coincidence, Adrian. I was in Fort Knox, Kentucky, getting ready to get deployed, and the day that John F. Kennedy got shot. Never forget it, because all the transfers were frozen. You know, nobody goes anywhere.
Right.
And this gets sorted out. So almost 50 years to the day, 2 years ago, I got the John F. Kennedy Medal from the AOH. And
right.
I got it in Kentucky, down the road from Fort Knox, where I was when Kennedy got shot. And I can't but reflect back and say, I was 18 years old at the time, and say, where are you going to be 50 years from now? A little bit, you know, I know that I'd be back in Kentucky getting the John F. Kennedy Medal.
Well, your family, your neighbors, indeed, in Greenwood Lake, would say that your family has said, for God's sake, if you get any more honors or, you know, plaques and very, very significant distinguished awards, would you ever, you know, put them in storage? You've gotten more awards, pages of awards here, but of the awards that you have received, can you kind of name a couple of them for us? And then this way, and I know what I'm doing here now, I'm going to land you in an awful lot of trouble with the rest of them, but just reflecting.
I think, Adrian, John Paul II, the Binnie Morenti Medal, which I got way back. It came through Colonel O'Fayuk, who was in South Armagh there.
Yeah.
And because of the amount of kids we brought out of the Cross McGlynn area or whatever, he was the one that was responsible for getting that. And, you know, John Paul is a saint today, so.
Yeah. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, that's a
you were never swayed one way or the other, and you are among those who are reluctant to say, you know, it's all me. You may be the leader of a pack, but you also give an awful lot of credit to those who started off with you, those who, became part of your dream, your ideas, And some of them indeed might have said, oh, here he goes again. That's really your track record.
It's difficult, Adrian, and you have been through it yourself, where you're up there and you receive the award and you look down at the audience and they are the people that, you know, did all the work and are responsible for having you up here. So, you know, many times I said I'm, you know, accepting the award on behalf of all of you people, because that's the way it was. It was simple as that, because without these people, it would never happen.
We have to go back, fast forward, friends, to a project and to a change. As you say, you don't come up with close to 23,000, taking responsibility for close to 23,000, you know, total strangers, Catholic, Protestant, Unionist, without again somewhere along the line, you know, saying this has to be this has to have a lasting effect. At what point did you see that kicking in terms of the early kids? They were here. And, of course, a lot of people here were saying, well, that's all right now. You're going to send them right back into the middle of the troubles. And then, you know, they'll be feeling worse than when they came over. Well, first of all, that never happened. But what was the lasting effects of taking kids who had, many of them hadn't even been outside their own immediate areas, never mind halfway around the world?
Well, we got amazing feedback from the teachers, you know, because most of these kids were selected through the schools or social services, and sometimes some clergy people would put, you know, needy kids forward. But, you know, the feedback was great, because there was many times, you know, we thought about it and said, well, you know, is this program worth what we're doing? And, you know, they were always there. Even to today, when I tried to, and we did close down the young kids program because we felt the need wasn't there today that was back in them days. You know, people will point out, you know, there's always need to get young people out of Northern Ireland. But, you know, it has come a long way, Adrian, and, you know, their families are doing much better. And, you know, the typical family back in the 70s, you know, the father was in the cash and the mother was raising four or five kids. But I was always amazed at the discipline that was in the homes at that time. And she ruled that house with an iron fist. And, you know, it was, yeah. And, you know, they felt bad leaving their kids leave, but they knew they were going to be safe for the summer. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, we did bring a kid one year that was like 8 years old, 3,000 miles, going to live with a family they never met or knew anything about it. I mean, you have to give so much credit to the families in Ireland that, you know, were brave enough to allow their kids to travel.
You know, it, like many other phases of life, the success of Project Children in Northern Ireland, you know, it kept humming along for all of these years. And, you know, so many people feel, well, they must be doing, you know, it's got to be doing something right, and yes, they have. But the level of commitment still, and that brings us to a documentary, one which, indeed, I don't know what is it now, time is going by, that the documentary named How to Defuse a Bomb / The Project Children Story. How did that come about?
Yeah, first of all, when they came up with the name, because I always tried to keep the bomb squad kind of out of it, because people were always fascinated, Northern Ireland bombs, bomb squad, you know, everybody wanted to do Syrian bomb squad, and that had nothing to do with that. But looking back at it, you know, it was a good title for it, because it's how to defuse the troubles, basically. And, I think they did an amazing job on it, Adrian, because it's never going to get outdated. You know, it's a time, it's history, and, it's kind of starts in the 70s and brings us right up to the present day. So, you could really sit and watch that documentary anytime and kind of appreciate it. And that's been proven, with all the showings. And we have 4 coming up now in March, and, we expect to do very well.
Well, I will rattle those off in a couple of minutes, but to get the iconic Liam Neeson to narrate, to become the narrator, mm-hmm. of this documentary, mm-hmm. I think that says an awful lot as well, because Liam Neeson, obviously, probably one of the best known actors in the United States, and for that matter, around the world, he would have, he would, in addition to being the narrator, he would know all about what it was like to grow up in, such a volatile area at that time.
No, and of course, Liam had been there for us prior to this, Adrian. You know, he did a couple of short ones for us, and, he was also very, very supportive. And as also his mother, was a great friend of mine, and I've been up to their home and everything. He thought highly of the program, and I couldn't see anybody else, narrating it. And I think that's what made it so special.
And it is. And now we can tell. First of all, this has had screenings, broad. Screenings right across the United States, but as you come into this March season, the screenings are taking place, and I'll try to get some of the venues here. On the 1st of March in Albany at the Colony Senior Center there, on March 3rd, New York University, I think. That's probably over subscribed already, is it?
It is, yes.
Yeah, okay. But Fordham Gaelic Society at Fordham University, that's on the 8th of March, and you will be, there's a meet and greet there with you, and that starts at 6 o'clock. And there will also be, indeed, an awareness of the Mulcahy Scholarship.
They're actually going to be, we selected, Adrian, 10 young people from here, Long Island, Queens, Bronx, Westchester, Rockland County. We selected 10 young people last week out of 25 of the most qualified young people I ever sat in, and just amazing kids. Every one of them should go, but unfortunately we only have funding to send 10. But they will be announced at Fordham.
And that brings us to March 22nd at Archbishop Stepniak High School in White Plains in New York. Now, we want, I think the best thing to do right now is to let people know that, first of all, I'm honored and Anya in having you as our guest today. But the best, really the best way to get information and to get the story of, again, the Project Children story will be to log on to projectchildren.org. That is www.projectchildren.org. And indeed, and you can go to Facebook indeed and search for Project Children Ireland. Dennis, it is always and has been through the decades, it has always been our pleasure and honor to have you as a guest representing so many people who, as we have discussed, took that extra mile, the extra risk in providing a very significant, important chapter in defusing the bomb. And again, friends, I'm delighted to welcome and say thank you.
If I could just add a special thank you to Catherine Flood and Linda Quaston Quarkel, who without them, a lot of this would never happen. You know, they do the websites, all the promotion, and an amazing job. Adrian, thank you so much.
And you're very welcome. And again, my guest friends, Dennis Mulcahy, co-founder of Project Children, and friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network USA, the Flannelly Show, live irishradio.com worldwide.